From the snowy peaks of the Rocky Mountains, through the harsh Colombian jungle, and all over the damn American South, this is Extra Life Radio.
This week's Extra Life Radio is brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com and the new iPhone app, Circle Challenge, at CircleChallenge.com. This episode is for you. Welcome back to ELR. This is Extra Life number 209 for Tuesday, January 27, 2009. It is the evening, and I am Scott Johnson. Welcome back to the show. Joining us this week is the venerable Brian Dunaway from MissionDeep.com and ComicsCoastToCoast.com. Hey, I was on that silly little show this week. Brian? Hello?
Oh. Scott was awesome.
Sorry, come back. Say that again. What? You were muted.
Hello?
I screwed up.
Oh, thanks a lot. I was going to say it was awesome having Scott on the show. It was great.
It was fun, dude. That was way fun. You need to have O on there and talk about commission. I think that would be a great little episode. You should do this. You should just start lining up web cartoonists, talk about their trade, what they think is cool, what isn't.
And I've already got the people's perspective because I called the other guy tonight.
Oh.
Hello.
Mark Larson, I called him tonight, and we talked about comic strips, and I recorded that, too, so we're going to post that on the next week's show.
Well, that'll be excellent. Also joining us is
Mark.
I'm basically the only guy that hasn't been on.
Apparently.
Who are you again?
This is Obsidian.
Well, apparently nobody.
This is Obsidian from commissionedcomic.com. Welcome back. How's it going?
Well, not so good. You know, apparently I'm the only guy that hasn't been on Comics Coast to Coast. So,
all in one week.
You've been on Comics Coast to Coast before.
No, I haven't.
A long time ago. You don't remember that? I'm hurt.
No.
I'm hurt.
No, I don't remember. I guess it just wasn't memorable.
It must not have been.
Ow.
So O is, of course, from commissioncomic.com. If you're not reading it, you should be, and that would be great. Also joining us is Mark, the other guy, Larson, who was here last week. He's here again. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good.
Oh, good. Good. Well, enough of this small talk chatter crap. Oh, and welcome to the chat room. Hello, all, one and all. Hopefully you guys are doing well tonight as well. It's always good to see those guys. Quick note of interest, I believe. Quite often on the show, we'll talk about things that we've seen, done, played, read, whatever, over the last week. And as it turns out, two of us have seen some, what I consider generally to be pretty girly movies during the week.
Yeah.
One of them has a nice fantasy slant. The other one is definitely full-on 100% chick flick. Let's start with the one that has some cool factor. It has vampires in it. Oh, you saw Twilight, a movie that so far has eluded me. I've decided not to see it until it is on video or on DVD. What did you think of that movie?
First of all, I saw it because I just believe you have to watch everything. You know, I just think you got to go watch everything.
Sure.
I mean, there's a few things I won't watch. I mean, there's very few things I won't watch. So I went and saw it. You know, I was curious about it. And it's definitely not a good movie, you know.
Really?
I know that's not much of a review, is it? No, it's definitely not a very good movie. It's not boring, though. It is filled with moments that will make you groan. It, in my opinion, has what is right. I mean, I declare it to have the officially tackiest vampire moment in cinema history.
Is it a spoiler? Can you tell us what it was?
No, I can tell you. First of all, these vampires. Now at the beginning of the movie, they say that they all live like in you know, the Northwest because it's always cloudy and stuff like that. So, I'm just thinking, I mean, how cloudy can it be that a vampire can go out in daylight? But yeah, sure. So suddenly, you know, when they fall in love and the whole high school thing and whatever, she asks him, you know, like, why don't I ever see you in the sun? And again, I'm thinking, how frigging cloudy is it up there?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be pretty cloudy. Even with clouds, I got like the transition lenses, and I can go outside. And isn't the UV ray?
Yeah, dude, mine turned dark too. I got those same crappy glasses.
Yeah. So what's up?
But anyway, vampire? He tells her that they can actually go out in the sun, but that the reason they're never out in the sun is because when they're out in the sun, people will see them as they really are. So by that moment, I'm kind of bored with the movie. It's really, really corny. It's very, you know, it's kind of like this high school romance to it, which, you know, I outgrew when I was, I don't know.
In high school?
In the womb. But then I'm thinking, okay, cool. He's going to stand out in the sun and he's going to look hideous, and at least I'm going to get to have a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
And he even gets angry because he's saying, you know, you can look however and I'm always going to love you. And I'm thinking, you're in high school. I mean, you're a kid. Stop talking like this is eternal love. So anyway, because I hate that about high school movies. I mean, they act like everything is so important, and you're in high school. Nobody gives a crap.
Yeah.
Who's anyway. Better? Who's on the show? Who's better?
Okay. But anyway, so she's saying like, no, you know, show me your face. Show me your true self. I won't mind. I'll love you anyway. And he's actually getting angry because she wants to see him. And I'm thinking, awesome. This guy is going to be hideous. I mean, it's going to be awesome. And so he jumps around and he moves around and he does a bunch of flashy stuff. And finally, he steps into the sun. And it's like they dipped him first in glue and then they dipped him in glitter. I am not kidding. No,
all right.
Really.
He's a
kindergarten
awesome.
Art project? Is that what he is?
No, really. I mean, I am not kidding here. This is not an exaggeration. It's actually they took the guy and they dipped him in glitter.
Well, Mark,
that's what he looks like.
It's one step away.
And the exclamation from the high school girl is, "Oh, it's like diamonds."
Oh, that's stupid.
And I threw up right
that's
there.
That's stupid. That's like so. It's one step away from being made out of like macaroni. Remember how you used to have make macaroni sculptures in junior
high? And the little paper mache you do on the end of the panel that you glue.
Yeah, those are hot, dude.
Thing is, I got a student this semester, and he's actually reading the Twilight series. So you know, So you know, I get into the classroom, and he's reading the second book or the third one. I don't remember. Yeah. So I just felt like pointing out, you know, like you know, that's kind of femme, isn't it?
It's a little femme.
But anyway.
At any point, do they talk about Elmer's glue and glitter in the book? Because I want
to
know.
So I asked him, like, hey, in the movie, there's a really corny thing. And I just wanted to ask you, because I don't actually plan on reading those books. But I am curious of knowing if maybe in the books they're cooler. And he said, well, in the books, they describe him that they look like they have diamonds on their skin. I'm like, okay. Oh. So that's basically what they look like. They're glitter vampires. And it is the tackiest thing I have ever seen.
Well, okay. I don't like that addition to the vampire lore.
No, not at all.
Anne Rice there for sure.
Okay, so you got your vampire movie for chicks. Mark, you went and saw something called with wars in it. So when I first heard it, I thought,
wars.
Dude, that sounds like a hell of a show.
Lots of wars. Well, let me premise this by informing everybody I'm in date mode right now, okay?
Oh, yeah.
I am not married. Yeah. I am dating.
Yeah.
So therefore, I end up going to shows that I may not necessarily go to when I'm actually living with the woman.
Yeah.
So yes, I went and saw Bride Wars with Kate Hudson and Anne Hathaway.
So wait a minute.
You went with
Kate
Hudson and Anne Hathaway?
What you're saying is that once you live with the woman, you just don't care anymore?
You just don't care. Yeah, of course. How do you think I've been divorced twice? Oh, come on.
Come on.
I got the thing down to a science.
You know, I thought I was going to go somewhere funny with this, but you just beat me to it.
So
it's good. It's good that you have a sense of humor about it, though.
So how is the film? I mean, is it crap? Is it fun? Is it? I mean, there's some chick flicks I can get my head around, but This sounds terrible to me.
No, I you know, I don't mind a chick flick as long as it has some interesting storyline to it. And, you know, this is pretty much what the previews show you. It's nothing special, but it is actually kind of fun. I mean, Anne Hathaway and Kate Hudson, they do a good job. And so it is kind of a fun show to see. It was an okay time. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's just groaningly horrible, but there's my review. It's not groaningly horrible.
Okay, that is a shining, sweet review. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I saw Wrong Turn, which was a horror movie about inbred freaking West Virginian psycho guys with axes. I watched that on Netflix streaming, and that was about the stupidest thing ever, but it was awesome at the same time because they totally captured that like cheeseball 80s kind of horror movie and lots
of... I didn't know that was on Netflix streaming.
Yeah, you need to see it. It's so stupid.
Speaking of which, I watched it from 2003.
Say, what? Who?
You want to see that movie go overboard?
See what?
You want to see that movie go overboard?
Oh, yes, I do. The sequel. The sequel's better?
It has a sequel. No, it's better because it's worse.
Oh, well, then I'm in, signed up, ready to go. I like a real cheesebag freaking horror movie. Okay, Brian, you were saying.
Just my turn. All right.
All right. I like it. Some
I was watching Netflix streaming too. I was watching Netflix streaming too. Also, and I see now I'm on the spot. And,
now you forgot what the hell you saw.
Yeah. What was it? It was from 2003. I watched Dorm Days, National Lampoon's Dorm Days. And before you chastise me, because they have a lot of straight to DVD movies and a lot of them are crap, but this actually was fairly decent. It was actually very classic humorous. That's right. You said humorous.
Yeah, that word doesn't exist.
But I'm supposing that if it's a National Lampoon's movie, I mean, you got to have titties in it, right?
Yeah, there is the occasional that. But did you ever see Sandlot?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Remember the redheaded kid from that movie? Redheaded kid, really ugly guy.
Oh yeah, the catcher.
Yeah, yeah. He is in this. Yeah, but he's not fat anymore. He's super skinny, but his head's still large. It's weird.
Was it his boobie?
Yeah, his head is still huge. But he's in this, and he reminded me a lot of Bill Paxton back from Weird Science. Remember when he was playing Chip in Weird Science?
I forgot he was in Weird Science. I forgot about that. That sounds like a real fun little trip into yesteryear. And since I make it a habit of doing this on the show, I'll just go ahead and do it again. And Mark can confirm this. Sandlot was filmed in Midvale, Utah.
Yep.
Shut up.
I'm serious. I'm dead serious. It's cheap to film here.
5 minutes from my house. Actually, one of the kids in my neighborhood, well, actually in my ex-wife's neighborhood, he was actually on the in the extras cast of that. So.
Oh, you're kidding. See? Look at that. His name was James Earl Jones, and he was in the yard.
He's little known. Little known actor. Well.
He's not really gone very far.
Isn't it funny, though, that, you know, like Brian mentioned when a person's fat and they get thin, somehow their face never manages to get completely thin. I mean, if you're fat, if you're really fat, your face basically stays fat forever.
Their eyes do. You look at Star Jones. Star Jones looks like a freak when she's thin because her eyes still look like they were stretched out from being fat. Like she needs to have eye reduction surgery.
This Star Jones person. Who is this
ocular
woman?
Ocular liposuction.
Who is this person named Star Jones? Oh, the chick from The View.
The chick from The View, yes.
The one that lost all the weight and was the big stupid deal. Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. All right, I got another example of that. I've been watching 24 and enjoying the crap out of this season because it's kind of back to – a lot of people complain, it's the same old show. I'm like, exactly. but what's her name? I just forgot her name. She's a comedian chick. She did the voice of the French girl in Ratatouille.
Garofalo. Janine Garofalo.
She's one of those people that when she loses a bunch of weight, her face still looks weird. Like a big fat face. It's just something I noticed because she's on that show this year.
Well, people with big heads.
I've never seen her skinny.
Well, she's thin as a dude.
Really?
You should see her on 24. It's weird. It's kind of freaky.
I do want to redeem a little geek cred here. I did watch, after the conversation we had 2 weeks ago, I did watch Steam Boy off Netflix stream.
Really?
Oh. Awesome.
And it was the subtitle one, so we got the full Japanese effect and everything.
How was it? What were your thoughts?
That was some of the best. I wouldn't say animation, because again, it still falls into the trap of being jumpy. But as far as scenery and artistry, it is absolutely incredible. I was blown away by the art in that. It was just a phenomenal show to watch, just to look at.
What I like about Steam Boy is it's less of the things in anime that bug me, some of the conventions, and more of the things that I, you know, that I like. It is a lot more fluid, in my opinion. I think it's
I'm thinking it will never be a 5-star with you because it wasn't filmed in Utah, is it?
That's possible. Possible. All right, let's move on. Well, that is not our topic. We talked about animation last week. This week, we're talking about the state of RPGs. That's role-playing games, not what Brian said, which is, what is it, rancid potato gas?
Potato gas. Yeah, that's
right. Oh, rotten potato gas.
Isn't there like some sort of a rocket launcher that's called an RPG?
Yeah, it's a rocket-propelled grenade. That's true. That is true.
Okay. Well, it's not that either.
No, it's not that either. A computer RPG is kind of what we're focusing on today, but we're going to look at kind of the history of this thing. And the reason this seemed relevant is because the way people get to play role-playing games today are not the way they played them 10 years ago, and they're certainly not the way they played them in the 60s and 70s when the idea wasn't even digital. The idea was very live-action oriented and that sort of thing. A brief history that I found, I thought this was kind of interesting. It turns out the LARPers are kind of the origin, the originators of this stuff in the end, which makes me both sad and happy for them, I suppose. but the assumption of roles was a central theme in a lot of sort of early 20th century activities, such as games like Jury Box, mock trials, model legislature stuff, and theater games. This kind of crap. This is like all like in the 20s and 30s. And I remember in high school we did this. We did like big mock trials. Remember that, Mark? We did the one for
the 20s?
No, in the 80s. and in the 60s, jump ahead a little bit, historical reenactment groups. There's these guys like with names like the Sealed Knot and the Society for Creative Acronyms or something. they began
for some reason the Sealed Knot sounds like something sexual.
It kind of does, you know? To me too. It sounds like something you'd find in the Kama Sutra. And K-N-O-T as well, so it's just weird. But anyway, they would perform creative history and reenactments. They're basically these like famous battles from the Middle Ages, but what started to happen is they'd start introducing fantasy elements into this stuff. And they'd start saying, well, yeah, you've all got swords, but this guy's got magic, and he starts yelling out his magic, and, you know, again, the origins of LARPing. And we've had, if you dig way back in the show, we've had a LARPer on this very show.
Yeah, we did. Remember that.
Yeah, and you'll note that we've not had any others.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there.
That was interesting.
Yeah, it was something.
It was almost interesting.
Nearly, quite nearly. So this is kind of cool. In the 70s, this started to develop into fantasy war games. And again, inspired by sword and sorcery fiction. Players controlled a single unit or character. The earliest stuff like this is, for example, Dungeons & Dragons. I know there's other stuff, but we're going to focus mainly on that. So jump to a little bit more current. So Dave Anderson or Andreessen, how do you say his name? Arneson, whatever it is. And Gary Gygax, whose first initial, by the way, is E. And I couldn't find anywhere what that stands for. But not that it even matters, but just something I noticed. But it was the first commercially available role-playing game. Now, one of us here plays this game fairly consistently in games like it, and that would be O. And
bum, bum, bum.
Do you feel like, let's just throw this question out. Do you feel like this stuff has continued to hold up as the chief inspiration for role-playing games? Is it still as powerful as it was in 1970-something in your mind?
Okay. Well, role-playing games as you know, on its own, I think it's still, you know, as good and as powerful as it's always been. It's never like that mainstream thing that you kind of see that everybody's doing. It has always been, and I believe it always will be, that sort of thing that only certain people do, only certain people can do, only certain people have the patience for, and it's always going to be a sort of underground kind of geek thing, the way I see it.
Right.
As far as you also asked that if I thought it was like still the inspiration for games and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Like for video games?
Yeah. Do you think people still see it as like if you're developing a fantasy MMO or something? Do you think it still you know, like these guys are still playing it. They still find inspiration in it, that kind of stuff.
I think it isn't. I mean, I think it was. And therefore, what you're getting right now is derivative, if that is even a word.
It is.
Oh, awesome. Because
it's perfectly used as well. No, it fit right in.
So it is sort of derivative of, you know, classic tabletop role-playing games, because those were definitely the inspiration for a lot of the earlier video role-playing games. But what I've seen is that the newer video role-playing games are more inspired on older video role-playing games and not on the role-playing games themselves.
Yeah.
You see a lot of stuff that is maybe a little bit forced. You see a lot of stuff that is definitely not going with, you know, what we see on tabletop. And what we're seeing on the new tabletop is that now tabletop role-playing games are taking from the video games, not the other way around.
Yeah, 4th edition D&D, right, is very gamey. It's got a lot of conventions you'd find in say, a World of Warcraft or even in a single-player, you know, sort of.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So you see it going the other way around, so it kind of, like, did a full circle. But I don't see video role-playing games borrowing from tabletop anymore. I mean, I don't think that is going to – I don't think that's going to – you know, I don't think the cycle is going to begin again.
Well, is this is the psyche finally got moved away? And anyone can answer this, because I think it's fascinating that this is how it was back in the day. But when D&D first came out and began to have kind of a cult following, parents and religious groups and people all over the place who were old and stupid freaked out completely about this thing. And it was going to destroy our children, and this will be the end of society as we know it, and blah, blah, blah. That turned out to be crap, obviously, but...
I don't know, man.
I mean, we're all sort of adults trying to work in the world now and seem like we're doing okay. It seems like those predictions were crap. But my point is, has that stigma worn off finally? Like, I don't hear a lot of parents worried about D&D anymore, even though total circulation of D&D as a product is way, way high. I wouldn't call it mainstream, but it's much more mainstream than it used to be. Does anyone say this stuff about it anymore? Are they all just focused on games now? Games are what's going to kill our kids.
I think it's a matter of what, you know, what calls people's attention a lot more. And there was a time when video games, when tabletop role playing games sort of caught people's attention. You know, a lot of Bible-pushing moralists and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Basically because they would see, you know, the word demon and a dragon has horns and, oh, you know, it's Satan. It's Satan. He's come to rape us all.
Yeah.
Because that's what Satan does.
But that's what the sign is, too, is a popular tabletop game.
Yeah, you know, Satan, he's got, like, a huge schlong and it has horns. The schlong.
So, Brian, you grew up in the South. You grew up in Bible-thumping South.
In the South,
Do you still hear this all the time down there? People going, damn it, that Dungeons & Dragons is going to kill our kids. And
we don't play that Dungeons & Dragons crap down here.
So wait a minute. Bill Clinton is saying Dungeons & Dragons is going to kill his kid?
That's the only time I can ever do a Bill Clinton is when I'm not actually trying to do a Bill Clinton. It's the only time I can pull it off. But is it still, Brian, you hear people freak out? Do you ever hear, like, on a Sunday, some preacher get up there all fired up?
Nah, man, no one ever talks about that. It's so underground. I mean, everybody just looks at those people that play those games around here and goes, psh, weirdos.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're not worried about them anyway. They're like, oh, they're going to hell anyway, so who cares?
Yeah, and why are they not worried about it? Because there's something else that calls their attention a bit more. I mean,
that's
World
what I
of
think.
Warcraft is definitely a lot cooler to be fighting against than tabletop games, so let's fight against World of Warcraft and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a level of uncertainty. You know, I mean, those of us, you know, back then, back in like the 70s and early 80s, when it was, you know, the big fear about it, there was so much that you know, quote unquote, mainstream society didn't know about those games that it caused all sorts of, you know, what's the term, fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Yeah.
And so. There was enough there to cause a fear factor, so everybody got freaked out. But now it's with video games. There's still, you know, there's still enough of an unknown about the effects of video games that it's easy to really spark people on that than it is on you know, like tabletop RPG, because, you know, I think it's also that the people who started playing it are now grown up and having kids, and they understand it's pretty benign.
Yeah.
And so it takes away a lot of that fear, because there are grown-ups who have good paying jobs, who live normal lives, who play this stuff.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, and besides, I mean, tabletop role-playing games are a social activity. You get together with friends. So when you look at the differences between a kid just sitting at his computer or, you know, on his video game console for hours and hours on end, most of the time alone, because we know a lot of these games are in company, but most of the time just alone, and you compare that with, you know, the kid just getting together with his friends and, you know, occasionally going out to his other friends and stuff like that, video games look a lot worse.
Yeah,
and besides, it's amazing. I can't believe we still have this, but a lot of people still see video games as an unhealthy thing to do. You know, the whole sit in front of the TV all day kind of thing, and they still see it as a very unhealthy thing to be doing.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, it's amazing, a lot of people still see it as the equivalent, you know, as, you know, in terms of what you're doing with your brain and thinking and all that, they still see it as some sort of mindless activity when actually video games are the complete opposite.
Yeah.
If anything, I don't have any statistics, but I'm just going to make some up right now. if anything, I believe that kids today are a great deal smarter just because of video games.
I'm going to agree with that. I think that they do have – I think they have an effect that is either not It isn't like they're becoming geniuses, but they're not – They're getting better hand-eye coordination. They're learning problem-solving skills. They're blowing the heads off aliens. I mean, all these things will help them later in life.
When aliens invade, it's going to be very useful.
Yeah, it'll be huge. Now, Mark, your mom wasn't she like kind of anti-D&D back in the day? I kind of remember.
Not as bad as a lot of people were. Probably
not as bad as your mom.
My mom didn't care. I don't think she even knew what the cover was.
Yeah. No, I mean, she was kind of concerned about it just because everybody else was talking about it, but none of us really got into it. So I don't think it was, you know, they were more worried about the music I was listening to than the games I was playing.
Yeah, that's true. Iron Maiden.
So you were listening to, like, the Village People.
Village People Culture Club. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, they're great, dude.
They're great.
No, I love them. I mean, I use the Village People every single chance I get for jokes, right?
Well, I just think it's interesting that now that at least three of us here are parents and we're raising our own kids with our own worries and our own stuff, I'm not sure. And back in the day, I thought, well, it's just parents who are worried about all this. Yeah. I'm not so sure it's parents who are that worried. I think it's loud one or two guys who make a big stink on the news about it, and then parents freak out. Like, it isn't parents going, oh, I'm so concerned because my kid won't leave that Dungeons and Dragons alone. But in the end, I don't think that's who it ever was, because today everybody's complaining about video games except parents I know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Jack Thompsons of the world who are out there screaming, and it's rarely, you know, a house mom who's watching her kid play Mario.
No doubt.
Well, let me get a little bit controversial here. I mean, the thing is – well, this is actually going to be controversial. I mean, this is not just going to be me saying, you know, titty or stuff like that. No, this is actually going to be a controversial subject. The thing is, when you look at it, most of the people that reject stuff like D&D reject it on a religion basis. You know, they reject it from the point of view of religion. And the thing about religion, and, you know, I don't really care what you think about religion or anything, but it is the truth that most religion or most religious people have their whole belief based on a lot of ignorance. And this is actually very sad. So and I got a pretty cool example about this. One time we were running a D&D campaign. And there were a lot of if any of you have played D&D, you know that there are some places in D&D where you can go to, like, the Christian equivalent of heaven, but, you know, more sort of like a Dantesque interpretation of heaven and hell and stuff like that. So you got, like, the equivalent of Christian or Catholic hell is called Baator, And you got the Christian equivalent of heaven is called Mount Celestia. And you got all the angels there, of course. And the angels, they have very cool names, because if there is something that actually this belief doesn't come from Christianism, it comes from Judaism or whatever, however you pronounce it.
Whateverism. Ezekiel.
Yeah, yeah.
Those
I mean,
from names.
Jewish belief, the angels, they come from Jewish belief, and they're really awesome. I mean, angels are awesome because angels are badass. I mean, when you look at the way angels are conceived, they're badass. But they're still angels. I mean, we're still talking about the angels that Christians and Catholics, a lot of them believe in and have symbols of them and images representing them and everything. But when you look at their names, I mean, aside from the fact that most of them just end in E-L, you got, you know, like Gabriel and Raphael, but you get a lot of weird names too.
Azrael. Those kind of names are cool.
So, I mean, we were playing and we're just throwing out these names of all the angels, and the angels are like really powerful and you can't fight them, but they're there and they're dangerous and everything. And this is the way Jewish belief conceives angels. I mean, these are dangerous, powerful beings, but they're still angels, and we're playing with them. And suddenly, I don't remember, like some mom from the neighborhood or whatever started complaining that she was hearing us basically name demonic entities and stuff like that, that, you know, were against God.
Yeah.
And we're like, lady, these are angels. these are names of angels. If anything.
The nice thing to know is that the controversy hasn't completely left. For example, about 3-4 weeks ago, I think it was. I can't remember exactly. But there's this quest in World of Warcraft as a Death Knight where you have to torture somebody to get information out of them. And when they give you the information, finally, after all of this torture, you kill them. And there was this huge stink about that happening.
Yeah.
And you might, you know, I guess a parent thinking their kid is learning how to torture people, I could see maybe why they'd overreact or whatever. To me, it's still my orc hunter or my orc death knight, you know, poking some guy until he gives me the information. It's not.
Hey, you've been desensitized. You've been watching 24 too much.
Well, it's true. It's not so much about the torture specifically. I know that's a hot button, but I've been headshotting people for years in Counter-Strike.
I mean, that's true.
You know, I just don't see this medieval thing as any more of an issue. If they're going to have an issue about everything, because video games are an outlet for stuff that you'd never do in real life a lot of the time. We're talking about Satan.
Yeah.
We're talking about people's irrational reaction to
Satan
games.
From Utah, isn't he?
Oh, I was talking about the torture thing. Yeah, and yeah. How games, yeah, all that crap. Okay, well.
That is really interesting that, you know, people don't mind the whole, you know, mass killings. I mean, the whole World of Warcraft, you and Randy covered this in the instance a while. You know, it's really a game about going around and slaughtering everybody left and right. And people's like, that's just good, clean fun. But then you introduce anything like torture, suddenly it makes everybody get queasy.
Well, they're only queasy because it's a hot political button right now. It's never queasy when you're doing that in many games past. You know what I mean? It's like,
but the thing is, I don't recall ever doing torture to somebody in a video game personally.
I'm trying to think.
And when you mentioned
I'm trying
that,
to think too.
It made me go, ooh, torture. I mean, that was my first reaction.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I played
World
of Warcraft clear up until, you know, the mid-70s, and I didn't have any problem with going around and slaughtering a bunch of, you know, innocent guys standing around in their huts.
The reason why is because in World of Warcraft and many other games, when you blow somebody's head off, they generally end up spawning back again, so you don't think of them as being dead. You just think of them as an inconvenience, and you had to blow their head off to, you know, teach them a little lesson for a short. Whereas torture, you don't know how that's going to affect them.
Well,
you know what I mean?
That's true, but there's still a. But you're not playing other players, and in the end. And I'm talking about an adult sensibility here. I'm not talking about a six-year-old who hasn't been, you know, his parents are just sticking him in front of World of Warcraft and say, here, play this. Because I think that's a whole other issue. But when I play that game, never once did I go, you know, I think I'm okay with torture. I think torture's okay. This game has really shown me the light. I no longer feel like this is a bad way to treat other human beings. No, I went, oh, dude, finally, I'm level 58. I can get the hell out of this place. You know what I mean?
Well, the thing is, I mean, most people, it's funny because a lot of the people against these sort of things think that this is actually going to make you enable you to torture somebody else. And the truth is, I've never seen a single solitary solid case of a video game that actually trained anybody to do anything at all.
Yeah.
I mean, anything.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not even talking just about bad stuff. I'm talking about good stuff too. I mean, you can't play that weird operation game. I forgot what the name is. It's a lot of fun.
The Wii game.
Yeah, yeah. Also on the DS. I forgot the name.
Crap.
Burger Time.
Yeah. Yeah. Burger Time is it? That was it.
No one get trained for McDonald's with Burger Time. It's just.
I know you can put that in your resume when you go, you know, I'd really like to work here at Carl's Jr. What's your experience? I played Burger Time a lot. Okay.
And now I did like 6,000 hours of Burger Time. I'm ready to go. This is nothing. Yeah, but, this is nothing.
But I mean, nobody learned medicine. Nobody learned medicine playing that. And I know, I mean, I don't care how many times you have played Mortal Kombat. This does not mean that you're going to go out and kick ass. I mean, what it probably means is that you're going to go out, and if somebody even so much as looks at you funny, you're going to pee in your pants.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just because you tortured somebody in World of Warcraft, that doesn't enable you to actually torture a person. When the time comes that you're faced with a situation like this, you're a virgin.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
yeah, and you're either going to be predisposed to harming other people, or you're going to be not predisposed to that. And regardless of what video games you played, if all you played was The Sims, you're just as likely to maybe a bad example, but you're just as likely to torture as a guy wouldn't be who played, you know, World of Warcraft, that quest over and over, or played Counter-Strike and shot people in the head over and over. I just can't see the connection. I never have. And I realize this episode's not supposed to be about this, but I think it's interesting.
Yeah,
because,
I mean, it's like if you ask somebody how smart they are, and they tell you what level they are in brain age. Like, what? Oh yeah, my brain is I don't know how many years old according to brain age. And you're not going to go, oh, you're really smart.
Yeah,
it's funny how though that like the research community still keeps, you know, having such a conflict with the results they provide in their quote unquote studies. I mean, one just came out. Well, yesterday, the day before, from Brigham Young University, right here close to Scott and I.
Right here in Utah.
Right here in Utah.
Yeah. Wow.
where they did a test, and their results about people who play video games is the more you play video games, the more antisocial you become.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and it's a whole thing of they seem to keep studying the wrong things. It seems like They keep looking at the wrong things, or looking at, for instance, like the guys from Columbine and saying, well, they train to do this on these video games, rather than saying one of the things they happen to do is play video games. They treat the video games as the reason for all this, rather than as part of an environment of a certain type of person where it really doesn't have anything to do with what's influencing them. It's just what, you know, an antisocial person may have a tendency to shy away from the world and play a game instead, you know.
Yeah.
They're looking at it the wrong way, it seems like.
It's like, they back in the day, they claimed that Doom, I think Doom 2 was found in their room, and they were making this huge deal out of it. Yeah. As if Doom 2 could be the training program for what they did, that horrible thing that they did. I mean, what happened that day? Did one of them say, you know, firing this semi-automatic assault rifle is nothing like the pulse rifle in Doom? I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
This is nothing like the BFG.
Yeah, where's the keyboard? How do I go forward? None of that crap happens. It's all BS. I freaking hate that. Oh, I hate that. All right, so where were we? Holy schmoly.
Any of these activities actually makes you antisocial.
I'm going to have a hard time. Yes, exactly.
all the conventions and all that kind of stuff, which these people, I mean, which we love to go to.
Exactly. That's a that was the point I was going to make before we moved on. The idea that gamers, and I'm surrounded by a lot of gamers, we all are, if the idea is that they are antisocial generally, I just, dude, it is not apparent to me at all. These people want to have meetups every 10 minutes. They want to have get-togethers in all these cities and states. The World of Warcraft Guild I belong to wants to do something all the time, and they're constantly getting together. We're meeting at this bar in Boston. Okay, cool. We're on our way. Blah, blah, blah. And they want to go to BlizzCon. They want to go to Comic-Con. They want to hang out and be a part of a bigger group and a social group. Now, is it true that maybe some of these guys fit in better with other people that have this same interest? Sure. But that's the point.
But is that not true for the entire human
race? The whole human race. Guys that like to golf, go golfing. Guys that like to go drink cocktails at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that's what they do. The social norm is what you want. And so, I just feel that. I mean,
everybody gets together with somebody that has common interests.
Exactly. That's crap, too, and, you know, I don't know.
But anyway,
it is what it is. About role-playing games. Indeed.
Yes. Role-playing, you know.
Yes, let's move on. So, where was I? Oh, okay, the point I wanted to get to next was video games that are big influences in the past and then maybe where we're at today and what we like and what we don't like about where things have gone with role-playing games. So, in the early days, we had things like Zork, which were, they were text-only games. You've walked into the middle of a field. On your left is a severed penis. What will you do? Pick up the penis. Picked up the penis.
Are you insane?
you can't
knock around the ball.
Exactly. So that was kind of an interesting way of. In fact, I think it's one of the truest forms of role playing because you really had to get into the head of this character. At least with video games.
I think my favorite game was on the Commodore 64 was the Hulk.
The Hulk? They had a game like that?
Yeah.
Like a text game like that?
Actually, yeah, it wasn't. The TV broke down, and all they got was a green screen. So they told his parents told Brian that it was a Hulk game, and you know that just shut him up for weeks.
Just believe it.
You do stuff like you come up to a wall, you can't get past it. What do? Get mad. You can't get mad.
I can't get mad. I'm getting pissed off.
That's interesting.
You're not gonna like me when I'm angry.
So there was a text adventure Hulk game. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
64.
There was also an old Intellivision game. Mark and I think it was, what'd you call it? Advanced Dungeons and Dragons? It was a D&D game?
The one you're thinking of has got to be different, but there was Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, which was similar. I guess it could be considered a role-playing
game.
Was it kind of
first-person perspective?
No, it was not first-person.
What was it? Like over-the-head kind of thing?
Just your typical, it was kind of like a scrolling. You just had your little character on the screen. And then, you know, you move it up and down through the caves, and you could only see so far into the caves. And as you explore the different areas, those parts of the caves would show up.
That sounds
a lot like Gauntlet.
Yeah, it was similar. I just felt like that game was influential moving forward, like a lot of other games, including Ultima, including, I can't think of any others. But Gauntlet's a good example, though. I feel like that isometric view, top-down view, only reveal what you've seen so far, kind of fog of war thing. That seemed like that stuff started to be kind of influential. There was a lot of stuff on the Intellivision that sort of carried over into a lot of other new games. Like, for example, remember that God game where you could, it was kind of like an RTS. Like, some say it was the first RTS, but you had to, like, build up your world and you had a whole nother, like, continent or whatever you'd have to fight with. Do you remember that?
On Intellivision?
Yeah. It was some kind of god game.
Well, there was a game called Utopia.
That's the
Utopia.
One. That's the one.
Oh, I remember Utopia.
Yeah, you battle against somebody on the, you know, you each had an island and you were building your island.
Yeah, that's it. That's cool. Yeah. That's way cool. Anyway.
I used to love Utopia.
Yeah, Utopia is a great game.
Utopia was a blast.
That one needs a sequel. Maybe not.
There was also one on the Genesis, started with a C.
Or was it Dune?
There was one where you were a god and you had to build up your world and also fight.
Yes.
It
started with a C.
Populous. Somebody put it.
Yes, Populous.
Oh, yeah, Populous. All right.
Or it starts with a P.
Okay. Yeah, a P. Yeah,
which,
a C.
Which looks
P,
like a C. So take the stick away and then turn it around.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exaculator. Yeah. Exactly.
I have exaculated.
All right, so then there's things like the Ultima series, and there was like Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale in the early 90s. Not that early, mid-90s. Then you got things coming up late 90s, like with EverQuest, Ultima Online, the Elder Scrolls series, which actually started quite some time ago, but we have now in the form of Oblivion, and before that, the one that I didn't like, and I can't remember the name of it, the original Xbox one. Anyway, that game, Diablo 1 and 2 were super influential, brought a lot of action to the whole genre. And if you come up to current, we're sort of in this place now where World of Warcraft is the big monkey on the stick, which means
big
nothing.
Big monkey on the stick.
I don't even know what that's not a very good thing.
I don't know. That brings up some imagery, though.
But you got games like Warhammer and other games that try to compete in that market, and the MMO market has sort of exploded, at least for a few companies. And the question is, there's obviously a lot to admire and like about where we're at with MMOs specifically, but
yeah,
they're mostly fantasy, this really successful ones. You have things like EVE Online and Tabula Rasa, which is going away because it didn't succeed. But so pretty much EVE Online after that. so do we like where we're at? Like, Brian, you played WoW until you fell down to the pit in a Rage Fire Chasm or wherever the hell you fell.
Yeah.
You haven't really done much else.
I think there's a very serious limitation to what World of Warcraft is offering as far as user interface goes. I feel like there's a lot of repetitiveness.
Here, here.
I'd like to see that go away.
Yeah.
In the next generation of games. And no, there's nothing wrong. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love World of Warcraft. But after a while, it's like I'm just, especially on levels where you just feel like you can't get through the quest and you're not leveling fast enough. And you're like, and another to address some of these issues. But I still think I feel like I'm just clicking a bunch of buttons down the bottom of a row. That's all I feel like I'm doing. Click, click, click.
Well, and you kind of are. WoW is really good at having tons and tons of things for you to do, but all of them are done repetitively.
Yeah.
Like none of them.
I tell you what got me out of WoW was I went to, I was working away. I was trying to get up to, I think I was trying to get up to 70, and I went off to another area in Outland. I thought, oh, great, all new area. This is going to be great. I walk in, the first 5 quests I picked up said, go kill 20 of this character.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I'm done. I'm so tired of just going out and doing the exact same thing over and over again. The RPG, the MMO that can solve that problem where all you're doing is going out and killing 10 of this and 5 of this, who can provide a little bit more variety into what sort of quests you're doing is really going to invigorate, or take it to the next level, I guess.
Well, you got to understand, too, Blizzard, in a limited way, Blizzard has sort of addressed that with Wrath of the Lich King. The 10 levels of content in Wrath are way more involved and creative. It's almost like day and night. I don't know who decided finally that was a good idea, but tons of variety and crazy crap to do, like really weird. And you get done with some quests and go, dude, that was awesome. I hope I have 10 more like that.
But Brian just hit on the reason I don't play games like World of Warcraft. And most people know that I don't play World of Warcraft, but what most people don't know is that I did. I was a beta tester. And the reason I don't like these games is because as a tabletop gamer, my options are always limited. Limitless.
Yeah.
My options are always limitless. I can always do anything my imagination can come up with. And all it has to do is be confronted with the DM's imagination and we'll see what comes out of it.
Yeah.
But I can do anything I want. And no video role-playing game can offer you this. Now, the thing is, all these games, basically all of them, are ultimately about leveling up, right?
I think that's true. It seemed that's even with the single player stuff. That's pretty much.
You got stories and stuff like that, but we're all paying far too much attention to leveling up. But the thing is, in a tabletop role playing game, leveling up just comes. I mean, you're playing, you're doing everything, you're having a lot of fun. Your character is living out his life, and along the way, he levels up.
Yeah.
What I found in games like World of Warcraft is that eventually, it all becomes about leveling up. I mean, eventually, they can just make you do anything they want, and all you care about is how that is going to make you get closer to leveling up. And that's where I said, this is not for me, because personally, I don't think that's any fun. I mean, and the missions are absurd. I mean, if I, as a dungeon master, gave my players a mission that said, you have to go and kill 20 boars for me, the first thing they're going to say is, why?
Yeah.
You know, why? Why do you need 20 boars? And why don't you just go get them yourself? I mean, don't bother me.
No, and I think that there's something. I think there's something to that. There's it, definitely it's a level grind, and the company that comes up with a way. I know ICE or what was the Baldur's Gate or Baldur's Gate? The game by BioWare that was. Well, I can't think of it. Oh, Neverwinter Nights tried to do this, and some would argue they succeeded because they have the whole way you can DM a game and all that. But yeah. But even that game, when I played the single player element, I was like, well, I want to advance. I want more stuff. And I think that works really well in a game like Diablo, yeah, where that's really the only focus. And there's story and there's fun and there's all that, but it's all about new loot, new levels, new skills, and new abilities. And arguably you could say that's true about World of Warcraft. It would be really cool if Blizzard or whoever does the next big thing could come up with a way so that it isn't just about getting the next level or getting the max level or the mad rush to getting all the gear that you want or whatever it is. It would be nice if they could find out a way to do that and keep it fun.
You know
and
what I hate?
All that.
You know what I hate? I hate it in these games when you're like, oh, this is a cool axe. I want to buy it. No, you can't use this axe. You can't use this axe because you're not this level. I'm like, what do you mean I can't use it? I can use whatever I want. I mean, I got the axe. I got the money. I want to buy it, and I want to use it. What do you mean I can't use it because I'm not that level? Is there like an axe club or something?
Yeah. What's even pissier than that is when you're not the right profession or the right class. It's like, what?
Yeah, I mean, what is the problem? I mean, what? I mean, if I should not be able to use this weapon because I'm not the right profession, then just make me use it poorly.
Well, obviously Blizzard's found a concoction of gameplay that people really like, or they wouldn't be playing it so much. I mean, there's 12 million people, so I don't want people who are playing it, including me. I really enjoy it. I like it a lot, and I'm enjoying 80, and it's a great time. But you guys all show something very interesting, which is there are a lot more gamers out there than 12 million who would probably play if some of this stuff was addressed or somehow solved. And I'm not sure it can be or will be. Gaming conventions in theory is hard to deal with. But guys like Brian O and Mark might throw more weight behind a game like this if you could bring at least maybe more. And we're back to the whole point. Maybe they could bring more role playing in.
Well, well, look at
to
this,
a game where it doesn't exist.
Somebody in the chat room is saying that D&D tabletop D&D has that same limitation. I mean, that you can't use this weapon because you're not this class. But the thing about D&D is that your dungeon master can decide on his own that this rule is stupid and that you should be able to use this axe. You're just going to use it poorly. You're not going to be very good at it, and that's it. And they're going to give you penalties and stuff like that, and that's it. Now, the thing with a game like World of Warcraft is that I'm not saying there shouldn't be levels. I actually like levels. Levels are something fun that shows how much you've played and how much you've accomplished. What I wish is that the game didn't make them so important, so that the only thing I'm thinking about is leveling up. I mean, I want to have fun.
Yeah.
And even if I'm level one, I want to have fun and interesting stuff to do, even though I'm level one.
Do you see that there might be a time, for instance, in gaming in the late 80s, early 90s, like arcade games, you know, the scoring, the whole idea of getting a score became so ridiculous that some games had it where, you know, you shoot one little tiny guy, you got 1,000,000 points, you know, so like the high score was like 500 quadrillion. And it got to the point where a score became completely irrelevant. Do you see a point with, you know, if there, I can't see this ever happening, but if there's a level backlash where people will get so tired of the whole leveling concept that there's some alternate way of playing it that doesn't require or doesn't put so much focus on leveling. Do you see the possibility of that?
Well, okay. Yes. And here's how I see it. And it's even through my experience with WoW. And by the way, I wish people could start a level one character in Northrend because the content there is awesome. It is really, really great. It's as if they learned all these lessons, but now you can't get there till you're 70. So it's kind of frustrating. But one thing they do really well, and that they've learned over the last expansion or two, is that when you do max out, you have a whole nother world of things to do. Running dungeons, earning credit for those dungeons, getting equipment off of bosses and dungeons that you have to fight really hard to get, having dungeons that stay open for a whole week while 25 of you would try to barrel through that thing. Not that that's new, but these are some of the fun end game things to do. There's also all these professions and side professions. There is reputation bonuses. Every time you kill certain things, do certain quests, you get reputation and money, which means you can buy more stuff, acquire new items. I think that the next game that eliminates leveling just needs to throw everybody in the world with the equal standing, and then that game becomes a game of, I need to get in good with these mercenaries because they're going to give me such and such of a reason why that's going to be awesome. And then I need to do this every day, which is going to give me lots of money so I can buy this Star Cruiser and I'll be the fastest guy in space.
Okay, here's something I think actually works. The game I'm going to mention has a lot of problems. It has a lot of bugs. It has a lot of glitches. And it's a resource hog, which I think is also a problem in a game. A game should not be resource hogs. But if you play the games from the Gothic series, you get games that are actually very logical in the way your character advances. I mean, it still has some problems. But, for example, in Gothic, what you do is, okay, as you play, you accumulate points for learning. And all you got to do is you got to find somebody that will teach you this ability, and he will teach you. And the cool thing is that the game is limitless in the way that you can go anywhere you want in the world. I mean, yeah, sure, at some parts in the world there are going to be monsters tougher than you can handle, but you can go there. I mean, you can go and you can use any weapon you want. And this weapon, you can have it. It's going to say, okay, you're not strong enough to handle this weapon. It's not about, you know, the fact that you handle that you're a fighter or you're a magician or anything. No, it's just that you're not strong enough. I mean, this weapon is too heavy for you. And the game has no classes. I mean, maybe you just made your character so he's more focused towards archery. Or maybe you made him more focused towards magic, but they don't classify you. I mean, you just build your character and you go building him, and he gains experience and he gains abilities and he does gain levels, but they're not really relevant. And I think Gothic is a great example of how you can make one of these games work.
Interesting.
And according to what I'm seeing in the chat room, there are actually games that work like this. They're saying that Ultima Online, that's the way it works.
I never played, so I can't speak to that. They also mention RuneScape. I didn't know RuneScape was like that. Interesting. I mean, maybe these things are already being done. Maybe these things are already being done. I just know that a major part of, let's say, World of Warcraft, a huge part of that game isn't just leveling. A big part of it is, look at the stuff I have that you don't have.
Yeah.
Or it look at, such, I've got this sweet
oh,
chess
yeah,
piece
that
today.
Sounds awesome.
It's totally
it's
like
actually,
that.
It's actually the greatest social game ever. I mean, it is so social, and I just don't know if anybody can get to that level anytime soon.
Well, you remember what Blizzard
that's
said.
That's his greatest strong point.
The Jeff Kaplan, the guy who's head of development for WoW, says the following quote, and I'll never forget it, because I just think it's, I don't know, it just shows how ambitious they are. He said, somebody asked him, is there something out there that's going to take WoW down, take World of Warcraft down? He said, we have no doubt that there's a WoW killer out there. We just hope we're the ones developing it right now.
Nice.
And that's obviously cool because they're competitive and they want to be on top for a very long time and everything's great and everything. All that's a great thing to say in general. But I also think it speaks to they know that people get tired of grinding. They know where the major holes are in big pieces of gameplay that are impossible to just change with the patch. And so I'm really excited about what they do next, whether it's the StarCraft MMO or it's something totally different. Whatever that secret MMO is they're working on, I have great hopes that they'll try to come out of this box a little bit of the things we've been seeing for the last, not just the last 4 years of WoW, but really all of EverQuest time, you know, and things before that. Ultima Online, I think, is still being played. And hey, if those guys have a cool way of doing it, steal some ideas from them. But, you know.
And if Spore was more social, I think it would have been a success. I just don't think it's ever going to take off.
Yeah, Spore's got issues.
Yeah. Well, you know, MMOs are such the rage now. As you said, there's a glut of them now. Everybody's trying to copy the WoW experience and trying to take that. But, you know, what I'm curious about is what's the next genre that's going to grab the interest of everybody? Or do you think that there is going to be a genre of games that can pull away a significant enough portion of the MMO crowd or create a community as large as the MMO crowd in the gaming community to kind of become the new thing? I mean, what would that be?
The Grand Theft Auto MMO RPG.
Well, I'm telling you. Actually, what I've always thought is that, well, at least what I would like to see in MMOs, I mean, no, basically just on online gaming, is I would like to see online gaming more focused towards fighting. And I know you can fight other people in World of Warcraft, but and I know maybe a lot of people don't agree with me on this, but I don't think fighting is exactly World of Warcraft's forte. You know, it's not really as gracious or as like, for example, in a fighting game, in an actual fighting game, some guy can just come in, grab the controller for the first time, and kick your ass.
Yeah,
just because he's better than you. I mean, he's more skilled. He can handle it better, and that's it. It doesn't matter if you're level 80. If some guy level 1 comes in and does all the right moves, your ass gets kicked, and more humiliating, you just got kicked by a level 1 guy.
Yeah,
and now I'm wishing there was actually an online game that was focused. You know, that it had all this element where you can just hang out, talk to people and stuff like that, but that it was a lot more focused around fighting, and where fighting was more like involved with skill and all this kind of stuff. Because that to me, I would really enjoy that. I would really just enjoy, walking around the world, fighting other people,
picking fights.
Yeah. I would love it. I would love a game where I just walk all over the world picking fights.
Okay, I actually agree. I think a game like that would be great. I think that it's important to note, though, I don't think Blizzard, or the WoW's not good at fighting in a very finesse sort of skill-based way, because it's by design. That game's a math game in the end. It really is. It's math with pretty graphics.
I mean, it takes a lot of strategy.
It's math. It's like everybody's on such an equal playing field that your only real skill is I need to be able to click 1, 4, and 8 in succession and then check, make sure the healer's okay, move out of the way real quick because that ground's bubbling up, and then go back and hit 4, 5, and 2 again. Oh, and send my pet in if I'm a hunter or whatever. And it's designed so that grandma and 3-year-old can play it and everybody in between. It's all about math. If I get the best equipment, it's because I went and did the work to do the things to get there. The game you're talking about is Twitch play, where people have to be good with timing and moves and all this kind of stuff. And I think it would be brilliant for something like that to be in the market, because it would address those players that don't like the single, they don't like sit there and fiddle with their keyboard and kill stuff.
You see, to me, that is one of the problems with video games today. And let's see how many of you guys agree with me. To me, one of the problems with video games today is that I was reading the review for Mirror's Edge. By the way, I played Mirror's Edge last week. I love that game. I love Mirror's Edge. It is awesome. But I was reading, and one of the complaints is that that the game is unforgiving, that some parts of it are too hard. And I'm thinking, wow, I remember some of the games from when I was a kid that were deadly hard.
Yeah, they were always
Ghosts and Goblins 2. Super NES one. That thing was horrible.
The whole Ninja Gaiden series.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yep.
The original one from NES. That's like insanely difficult. And I'm thinking, wow, games are worrying too much today about being easy, about being friendly. And you get stuff, you get a bunch of weird sort of over-the-edge stuff, like Prince of Persia, the last one, where you're like, oh, there's basically no challenge here, whatever. I can just basically screw up all I want.
It's the casualization of video games.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, a game like the one I said before, that would require some skill and stuff like that, but, wow, why is suddenly skill no longer cool? Why is suddenly having to play something and get good at it no longer something good?
See, and I agree that they're dumbing down single player games left and right, but I think there's a lot of room and continues to be a lot of room in the multiplayer market where skill is everything. Shooters continue to be about who's the best in a multiplayer environment. And that's why I say your MMO idea of a fighting game would really appeal to that mindset
if you take the model of World of Warcraft and you can make it. I mean, it's not really that hard. I mean, you can make one of these games where a person with no skill can still have fun. I mean, they can get on the game. Eventually, just by playing it, you're going to get some skill at it. So yeah. You can have fun when you're level 1. And when you're level 80, you've naturally gotten some skill at it. But still, I mean, if it's made in this way of fighting, a person that is level 1 that is skilled, like, for example, I'm level 80 and I'm just starting again, well, hey, you know, at level 1, I can still kick ass. I can still have fun. So people can have fun in their own way.
Yeah, agreed. All right, before we go, we're about out of time. I want to go around the table and ask each of you if you could write a computer role-playing game, be it MMO or otherwise, what setting would you put it in that you've never seen before done? As an example, BioWare came out with that game that I can't remember the name of. But anyway, it was set in like ancient China and had like dragons and all that kind of stuff. What was that game called?
Yeah. Oh, that was called Jade Empire.
Jade Empire, thank you. So not even China, but more just sort of Asian mythology and stuff, which is really cool. So
actually, it was Chinese.
Was it Chinese? Okay. I never played it. But the idea is if you could put a role-playing game in a setting and you've not seen that setting before, what would it be? Brian.
Ooh, Brian. Haven't seen it before or haven't seen it lately?
You haven't seen it at all.
Ooh. You're stalling.
Yes, I am.
All right. If it has to be, it can be one that you've seen not lately.
Okay, then I would like to see something like Leisure Suit Larry, like updated and supercharged.
All right. Leisure Suit Larry. You mean like Cartoon World, or you mean like set in his sort of jokey...
Yeah, in his jokey kind of atmosphere.
All right.
What's that?
No, he just wants porn.
Yeah, it could be. All right, so there's that.
Nothing better than cartoon porn, let me tell you.
Yeah, that's hot. All right, so Mark, where would you set your game?
The games I love the most and always will love are the sports games.
Yeah.
I would love an MMO where you start out as like a kid on the playground and you can pick whatever sport you want to do, or you can try a bunch of different sports and work your way up to the major leagues of that sport.
Nice.
And have it so you can do anything. You can decide you're going to be a basketball player or a baseball player.
Yeah.
And have that whole world built so you can try and level and move your way up in whichever one you want to do.
That's a great idea. And EA should do it, because EA's already got all those engines, dude. They could just incorporate all that crap. You want to be a hockey player? Suddenly all your game time, you know, your actual games you play are in, you know, the NHL engine or whatever. That's a brilliant idea. Ding! Yeah. Kudos to Mark. Treat to Mark. All right.
Woohoo!
Like my
dog. I get royalties.
What world have you not seen explored that you'd like to see in an MMO or any kind
of
RPG?
I just realized from the chat room that no matter what I say, there is probably going to be a game that does it. But I would like to... First of all, I'm a big fan of steampunk. So if I get some steampunk, I'm going to be happy. Somebody just recommended in the chat room that for steampunk, you should look for a game called Arcanum. I'm definitely going to look that up.
Yeah. That's
cool. I would also like to see Shadowrun given a little bit of respect.
Yeah, no more first-person crap shooters.
Not what they did with that. I would like to see Shadowrun given the respect it deserves. An MMO based on Shadowrun would be awesome. I would love that.
All right. I was going to... Steampunk was definitely the top, or one of the top ones for me. The top of my list, though, is I want one set in the Old West. I want to raise up a cowboy and I want to kick some A. That's what I want. I want guilds, which are like posses. I want like bad guys, good guys, sheriffs. I want that MMO, and I want the combat to be first person shooter, and I want that game. And why that game isn't out now, I'll never understand why that game hasn't been made. But make it, by gosh.
Yeah.
All right.
And you know, and the final thing I would like to see like a sort of kung fu game, you know, like I said, an MMO that revolves around fighting. And it's basically just like Kung Fu. You travel the countryside looking for people to pick fights with.
Yeah. Interesting. Awesome. Yeah. I'd like to see Left 4 Dead go up just one more level and just be a really massive online player.
Dude, game. No doubt. Like an open world, you get the zombies everywhere. Yeah. That game is so awesome. I love that freaking game.
I got a question before we go.
Yeah.
It seems that with each new expansion, World of Warcraft goes up like another 10 levels.
Yeah.
And at first you can go up to level 60, then 70, now 80. Do you think they're just going to do this indefinitely, or do you think that there's going to be a limit? Like, okay, here's the new expansion, but no more leveling. I mean, we had enough of that.
We had a discussion about this very thing on the instance not long ago, and Randy believes they'll continue to do expansions with new level caps. I suggested, without any knowledge or reason to think this is true, but that they could stop doing levels, keep us at 80, and just introduce new content that still new things to earn, new reputation to gain, new places to go and be and grab and get and do, but not have to continue to build new continents with 10 new levels of story and 10 new levels of content to have to grind through. I don't think they'll – he's probably right that they won't do that. But I would really like, I wouldn't mind seeing that. I wouldn't mind seeing a game where, you know, an expansion where there was more for new players to do, because Wrath of the Lich King gave nobody new anything to do at all. It was great for, you know, high level players, but if you were level one, you're screwed. You got to get to 70 before any of it mattered.
Was that not the same with Burning Crusade?
No, in Burning Crusade, you got two new playable races that you could start at zero. Yeah. And build up,
which I like
on both sides of the war, or both factions. So that was cool. And two new starting areas and two new huge chunks of starter content. So all that stuff was new. So there was something for new people to do. But in this one, there's no new starting class. The only new class is the hero class, the Death Knights, and they start at 55, and you can only make one if you have a current level 55 character. So, you know, new guys were just kind of left out in the cold this time. I'm not exactly sure why. It was odd for Blizzard to do that. In the new game, it would be neat to see more for new players and a way to just make leveling less important and focus more on, I don't know, other stuff, whether it be PvP elements or, you know, greater stuff going on with dungeons and story and reputation and all that. That'd be cool. That's what I say, but we'll see how that all pans
yeah.
out. Yeah. Yeah, so take that. All right, well, okay. That's going to be about it. If you guys want to participate in the show by letting us know your thoughts on RPGs, send them in. You can do that at extraliferadio@gmail.com. We'd be glad to read about your thoughts and your feelings regarding all this sort of stuff. Good times were had by all. So thanks, everybody, for being here. Thanks, Mark and Brian. Thank you to the chat room. You guys were great, except for a few losers who always try to mess things up. But they're not regular, so who cares? Thanks to our sponsors, GoDaddy.com. Don't forget Life 1, Life 2, and Life 3. Those are the codes. They save you money. That's Life 1, Life 2, and Life 3. What else? Our next show, we don't know what the topic's going to be, but we're going to start doing these a lot more, guys. So I hope you guys enjoy these sort of big, thick, juicy topics, because they're good times for us. We like talking about this stuff. And hopefully you do as well. If you have any thoughts about what some of those should be, you can also email those as well. Make sure you check out at commissioncomic.com, Brian over at Mission Deep and ComicsCoastToCoast.com, and of course MyExtraLife.com for me. You can follow O on Twitter at OAbnormal. That's /OAbnormal at Twitter.com. You can follow me at /ExtraLife, and you can follow Brian at /MissionDeep. You can follow Mark nowhere because he does not tweet. Oh, look, the Xbox turned into a robot. Now he's fighting somebody. That's just dumb. They're dead.
You know, just grab an old lady and give her a titty twister or something like that. I want to die with an erection.
He's got to watch his balls drop one more year, dude.
I'm not sure I remember the God of War minecart level, but yeah.
You gotta get it.
Insert name of whoever here ruined my childhood.
I'm cold. Bring me another flag. Sparkle. Sparkler. She was in Sparkler. The mom made a masturbation joke. Yardy, yardy, yard.
You know, a transformer that tripped and fell. It's like boobs. Everybody likes boobs.
Oh, it is just lovely to have you near me, so close to me. Let's use the map, SD Conduto, or whatever.
Scott Johnson is telling me that I follow Sir.
Here's episodes, not decades. Or
when you make an adult movie, it is just for adults.
Everybody walks like there's a stick up their butt. Welcome to my home. Do you have any black tar heroin on your person? Well, Shakira's pretty well animated. But I can't stand Madagascar. I want to pee blood when I watch that. Ah, there's Wolverine, and I expect him to go, gah, 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 gah.
Hello, listeners of ELR, and welcome to the very first Korn's Sack of Apps. Every week, I will be reviewing three apps for the iPod Touch. My first app this week is SimCity. SimCity is a port of SimCity 3000, and it seems to be very full-featured. All the controls have been completely redesigned for the iPod Touch, and all of them do an excellent job at allowing you to build specific points. SimCity has been reported to have some stability issues, but I have yet to run into any of these. SimCity is $9.99. The second app this week is App Sniper. This app is a plugin for the App Store. It will allow you to scan the App Store for increases in prices, apps that have gone from a paid price to free, or will allow you to snipe an app, which will be a set price, which you say that you want a specific app to fall to before you will buy it. The third app this week is Ustream. Ustream, of course, allows you to watch Scott Johnson and all of the ELR crew from the comfort of your desk. They have recently released an iPod Touch app, which will allow you to do the exact same thing over Wi-Fi. Well, thanks for listening to this program, and be sure to tune in next week to ELR to hear a new app.
Yeah, there is the occasional that. But did you ever see Sandlot?